And welcome back to Turnout on CIUT 89.5 FM. I am Sean Byfield, and today we have a cool theme. Our theme is unexpectations. So to talk about that, I'm going to bring our first guest, which is choreographer Alyssa Pires, on the phone. Alyssa Pires has created works for Ballet Kelowna, Ballet Edmonton, City Ballet, Ryerson University, and more. Alyssa is one of the 2017 winners of Northwest Dance Project's International Choreographic Competition. Her company, Alyssa Pires Dance Projects, made its critically acclaimed full-length debut with Exterminating Angel at the 2016 Toronto Fringe Festival. Alyssa spent two seasons working with the National Ballet of Canada as part of their choreographic workshop. The resulting ballet, In Between, premiered as part of five creations in January 2018 and was performed at the National Ballet of Canada's gala this June. Alyssa recently teamed up with Ballet Kelowna on a piece for Fall for Dance North coming out this October, which we will be chatting about today. Alyssa, welcome to Turnout.
Thanks so much. It's actually Alyssa Pires, but that is okay. Everybody messes it up. So
it's Alyssa Pires.
Alyssa Pires.
My apologies. I'm apologizing on air so everyone knows
That's
how to pronounce
okay.
it correctly.
Glad you're here. This is a public service announcement of how to pronounce my name. It's
Thank
Alyssa
you.
Pires.
This is awesome. Thank you so much. So we're glad you're here. It's early. And we're going to talk about what you're going to be doing at Fall for Dance North. We're really excited to hear. But before we get into it, we have a cool theme called Unexpectations. And basically, let's talk about this, because computer programmers are used to expectations. You know, they punch something in a computer and they have expectations of a desired result. But artists and choreographers, we don't always work the same way, do we? So
no.
When you create, do you create with some sort of expectations?
I think it the expectation for me changes. So often when I'm doing a commission for a company, there obviously is an expectation of product. They've hired me to come in and make something, and I have a premiere date that I have to meet.
Right.
So there's that kind of expectation. But the expectation on myself, I try to keep open. So with Mambo, for example, I was really thinking about making something different. And a little bit before the creation process with Ballet Kelowna, I felt like I couldn't do it. I couldn't do what I had originally planned. And I was really needing to make something a little more joyful. It was the middle of winter in Toronto. It was the middle of winter in Kelowna. The whole world felt like it was in the middle of winter in
right.
terms of, you know, the news and the world feeling very cold, and I just couldn't. The original piece that I was going to make was a little more dark and serious, and I needed something light in my life. So I was very grateful that Simone, the artistic director at Ballet Kelowna, was open to me changing my idea. And then I came in sort of fresh because I changed my idea pretty last minute, and the dancers were so open to just following me down this sort of crazy path. So certainly in terms of expectations for me making that piece and for the dancers, we were really spontaneous in the studio, and I think the product that we came out with is something that's really joyful and celebratory.
Now we're talking about Mambo for our listeners who are just joining us, and I'm curious as to how you got started with Ballet Kelowna. Can you tell us a quick story?
Well, I've been making work, I'm based in Toronto, but I've been making work sort of across the country for the last few years, and one of the schools that I work with quite regularly is Victoria Academy of Ballet in Victoria, BC. And I made a work for their post-secondary program. And Simone, the director of Ballet Kelowna, had been down there to check out some of the dancers and to potentially hire. And she saw my work there and got in touch.
Terrific. I'm curious now, because we are talking about unexpectations, was there ever a time during this process when something unexpected happened in your creation process of Mambo? And how did it affect your piece?
I feel like every day is sort of unexpected. This work really started from the music. I was feeling sort of sad and discouraged with the state of the world, and I was listening to music and came across Papa Loves Mambo by Perry Como in my iTunes library, and that sort of set off this whole trajectory of finding swing and Latin swing and jazz tunes sort of from that era. So that, I mean, that in terms of a beginning was very unexpected.
Okay.
But in the studio with the dancers, there's a lot of goofiness and quirky, silly movement that really came from us playing together. I can think of one specific moment in one of the sections. It's Sway. We were in this very awkward shape on the floor, and there's this big accent in the music, and I felt like we really needed to hit it. And one of the dancers sort of tapped the floor with her foot, and in this sort of cute, quirky way. And I thought, that's it. That's perfect. We have to do that.
There's the spark.
So I try to create really spontaneously with the dancers because they're active collaborators, and I think what we make together is always better than what I can make on my own.
Now, have you ever worked with this, you said jazz and mambo. Have you worked with these genres of music before?
I try to use music from a diverse, you know, I try to use really a diverse range of music in the work that I do. So I have often used popular music. I have a couple of pieces with Frank Sinatra music. I feel like it's a really good way in for audiences, especially audiences who maybe aren't as familiar with dance in general or contemporary dance, giving them sort of this offering of like, you know this music and you like this music, hopefully.
Hopefully.
I mean, who doesn't love Dean Martin,
right,
and Perry Como and Rosemary Clooney? You know, it's like the most joyful
classic crooners.
Everybody, you know, everybody can find something to like in there. So for me, it's like a little offering to the audience of, come with us, you're gonna be okay.
Well, it sounds perfect for Fall for Dance North, because that's exactly what this is about. It's an opportunity for people to experience the different styles of music, different styles of dance, and the best part is $15 per ticket.
Yeah.
So, audience, if you're listening, Fall for Dance North happens this October 2nd through the 6th, and there are two locations. We have the Sony Center main stage, but we also have the Ryerson Theater. And, Alisa, you're part of the third program.
Yes.
And your performance of Mambo is happening October 2nd and October 4th at 7:30 p.m. Now, what's interesting is that yours is at Ryerson, and you're actually an Honors BFA graduate from Ryerson School of Performance. So how does it feel to be back?
It's pretty cool. I'm really excited about it. I've worked with the students since graduating. I've worked with the Ryerson dance students a few times on different projects. But this will be the first time that my work is performed on the Ryerson stage as a professional. So, you know, I spent 4 years there. I performed on that stage countless times. I really cut my teeth as a choreographer there. I had, you know, my first works performed on that stage. I walked across that stage when I graduated and got my degree.
So there's a lot of nostalgia, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's very much like a homecoming for me. So I'm excited to bring a work that I made outside of Toronto, outside of Ontario, back to my home.
Wonderful. Now let's talk about, back into our theme, unexpectations. And two of the most challenging words, I think, for someone who loves control is letting go. And I'm curious about you, because I know sometimes I have a hard time letting go of things. Do you ever feel the same way?
I think being a choreographer is a balance of control and letting go, because I always say it's not me up there. I'm not dancing in my own work most of the time. And so you, as a choreographer, have so much control up until the performance, and then you sit there and there's nothing you can do.
Right.
You know, this is, I feel like every piece I make is like a little piece of me. And so they're incredibly personal. And to put that in someone else's hands, and it's, you know, it's your name on it, it's your life in this little piece of art.
And it takes a lot of bravery as well, wouldn't you agree?
I mean, I try to be brave, yeah. But I think that's the ultimate trust for me is with the dancers, that they have bought in through the rehearsal process and the creation process. They've bought into what I'm trying to do, and we've done it together, and so they also feel ownership over it, hopefully.
Now,
so that by the time the performance comes, I feel confident that they are going to, you know, bring it to the level that we, you know, that we hope for.
So at what point, because sometimes I love the fact that we have so much trust in our dancers and the process, but at what point do you let go of the expectations? At what point do you say, you know what, this really isn't turning out the way that I had envisioned? It might be for better or for worse, but is there a point when you say, okay, you know what, Lisa, like, I'm done. I need to let go.
I think there's sort of different stages of that. In the creation process, you have to try. You have to give things several chances because, you know, we're different. Our bodies are different every day. Sometimes a lift can work perfectly one day and the next day not. And so, you know, we have to try, you know, leave it for today. Maybe we'll come back tomorrow. But if it's not working 3 days in a row or something like that, yeah, there comes a point where we go, okay, we need to make an adjustment here. I think I heard an interview once with a film director, and he said sometimes if your project isn't working out, the thing you're holding on to the strongest is the thing you need to let go of.
Ooh.
And so sometimes our original idea, the thing that we become married to, of like, this piece is about blank, sometimes the piece is going a different direction and you just have to let it go the way it wants to and release that original idea, and follow, be present in the process that you're in, be present with the people that you're with. Especially doing commissions, I often walk into a studio, meet people for the first time, and have to create that moment, that instant. And we're on a deadline, and I need to have a piece done in, you know, 2 weeks.
X amount of time, right.
And I've just met these people. So there, sometimes in meeting those people and in getting to know them as artists and as humans, the work starts to take a different path, and that's okay because it's the work that you make together. It's not about the idea that I came up with when I woke up in the middle of the night 2 months ago.
Right,
you know,
right.
It's about being present with the people that you're with and following that.
Well, we look
that being
forward.
Said, it's hard to do.
Yeah, well, we look forward to seeing on stage what's been going on in your mind. So congratulations to you, Lisa.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me.
And for the audience listening in right now, we're talking about Mambo, which is a part of Ballet Colonna's performance at Fall for Dance North, happening this October 2nd and 4th at 7:30 p.m. It's part of the program number 3 at Ryerson Theatre. For more information, visit www.fallforffdnorth.com. And before we head off, I have one more question for you, Lisa, before we head out. What advice do you have in say 30 seconds for our listeners who get attached to outcomes?
Oh my gosh. Getting attached to outcomes. I feel like being a dancer is the ultimate test of being present, because your body changes every day and over time. And so the best that you can do is the best that you are today, not the best that you were yesterday or next week or next year. And so I think, I don't know if this is really answering the question, but I try to stay really present with who I am today and with what I can do today and what I can give today. And if I'm giving 100% of today's, you know, ability, then I'm doing okay, even though it might be less than yesterday. If it's 100% of what I can do today, then I'm doing okay.
I think that was fantastic advice for our audience. Thank you, Alisa, for sharing. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
We're so inspired. And congratulations, and we'll see you at the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
We just had a chit-chat with Alisa Pyrus from Ballet Kelowna. She has a piece called Mambo performing this October at the Ryerson Theater, part of program number 3 with Fall for Dance North. I'm Sean Byfield, and we'll be back after this short break. So you say you have a lover, and you love her like no other. So you
Welcome back to Turnout Radio, opening up the dance scene on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Hamilton. Our next guest, Nicole Brooks, is the founder and director of Assay Productions. Her extensive accomplishments include filmmaking, directorial work, performing, singing. She's also a playwright, composer, curator, teacher, and artivist. Brooks has devoted over 15 years producing innovative content for the stage and screen, with a focus on narratives that illuminate the peoples of the African diaspora. In 2012, Brooks officially added playwright to her list of talents. Now, her debut theatrical work, Obia Opera, which she created, wrote, composed, and also performs in, has been staged in various incarnations from festivals to staged workshop productions in Toronto between 2009 and 2014. She joins us now to talk about the work and its showing in the upcoming Fall for Dance North Festival. Welcome to the show, Nicole.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
A pleasure. First time with us on Turnout Radio.
Yes, indeed.
And not the last.
Never.
So, Nicole, today on the show, we're talking about unexpectations. I just love that word, unexpectations.
Mm-hmm. Now, I love it too.
Well, you're going to love it more after this, because I think one of the first things I wanted to kind of dig in where you're concerned is when you take a look at the development of your artistic practices over the years, were there any unexpected shifts in your approach to creation?
Well, I think the unexpectation happened just with me even doing theater. My discipline, as you mentioned in the intro, I'm known as a film and television producer and director, and I was encouraged to look at the medium of theater to continue telling stories of the African diaspora. With that, I never wrote a play, so that was unexpected. I never wrote a musical work before. That was unexpected. And so in that, I think I really grew as an artist in way of understanding that as a storyteller, generally, that's how I like to define myself, is that I could use different mediums in order to tell whatever story that I want to tell. So this really broke me out of my shell, I think, in the way of the unexpected way of storytelling, that I could take something and move it to the masses in a different way.
And big transitions as well, you know, when you're coming from that place of doing all the work that you were doing before and now transitioning into the work for stage. Was that
challenging? Absolutely. It's a huge difference, like even in the way of storytelling.
Right.
You know, television and film usually has the law of show, don't tell. You want to show the action. But in theater, you need the spoken word. We need to say it, in such a way. So that was a huge unexpected learning curve for me, but it was really amazing. And you're right, with all the incarnations that I've done of the work, each phase had a different unexpectedness, lack of a better term, in way of what I had to achieve. I don't want to say overcome, but I would say growth, because as the piece evolved, so did I in storytelling.
Right.
And that wasn't something that I necessarily went in knowing that that was going to be happening. So that too was unexpected.
So the piece is evolving, Nicole is evolving as an artist, and during this journey as an artist of the African diaspora, has the scope of your practice ever been negatively influenced by messages, really, that try to define who you should be as an artist?
Well, I know that the word Obia in itself is very controversial, especially in the Caribbean community. And I remember, especially the year that it mounted in 2012, that's the year that it was also nominated for a Dora Award. I was hearing that people were ripping down posters, that there was a lot of anger. And these are people, again, who have not seen the work. So we ended up having to have a town hall meeting, basically, after one of the shows. And it was pandemonium, that where people were really, you know, fighting the fact of, why are you using this word, Obia? It's evil. What are you doing? You're spreading evil in the land. And, you know, that, it was funny because I was just like, I'm actually trying to dispel what is obviously a negative connotation on this word and what it means. So there was controversy just by the use of the word, Obia Opera. And so that negativity, a title of my work, then was brought upon to me. Because even my mother is quoted as saying, you turn Obia woman now, I can't tell my church friends you're doing this work. I'm like, but you haven't seen the play. How do you know what the play is saying? But because of this one word, it shifted a lot of negativity of who I am and what my work represents.
Did you find that it impacted you in terms of your artistic development during the journey as well? It impacted you negatively?
Yeah, because, you know, I've been quoted as well to say, you know, as a Black woman myself, just because I'm Black and a woman, my work is political, right? And there's a politicizing that happened. So absolutely. It sort of made me look at the work and say, even more so, what are you trying to say? What is it that, what in your work, as opposed to just entertainment or whatever, what is the change in the world that you're trying to make, Nicole? What is the statement that you're making? And what are you standing by as an artist that in the end, you've already witnessed that you at some point have to defend?
Wow. And, you know, a lot of these questions that are coming at you, you know, as artists, when we get all of these messages, it sometimes also begins to cause us to question our work, question our practice, question the validity of what we're doing as well.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Now, let's talk a little bit more about the word Obia, because Merriam-Webster's dictionary defines Obia as a system of belief among Blacks, chiefly of the British West Indies and the Guyanas, that is characterized by the use of magic ritual to ward off misfortune or to cause harm. And so, Nicole, as I was doing the research on this word, other words like sorcery, voodoo, became a constant as well.
Right.
I have to know, what unexpectations do you think individuals would be surprised to learn about Obia through both your work and what really what you're trying to put out there in terms of what you're trying to teach individuals through the show?
Right. Well, I'm going to precept your question by letting people know how I came up with the title Obia Opera, because I really became fascinated. Well, let me say this before getting fascinated of the word Obia, is that someone called me a witch. And instead of getting upset, I thought it was quite fascinating that this day and age, someone would look at me thinking that I was a witch, like a practicing witch, like Wicca, Wiccan. And I'm like, really? I'm not that. But because I'm burning sage and incense and, you know, I have prayers, what does that mean? So instead of getting upset, I actually started studying and looking up and researching what all that meant. And what came up a lot was Tituba, surprisingly enough, in my research. And Tituba is the main character of the story of Obia. And if people are familiar with the literature of the Crucible, you know, she's mentioned for a few sentences and then she's gone away. And then the Salem witch trial is usually known as persecution with white women who were accused of being witches. But when I started looking at her and then I started to research the actual Salem witch trial, the word Obia came up. And similarly to the definition of the dictionary, I was like, how do these Puritans know this word? Because it's a Caribbean term. It's not an American term. It's not an English term. How did they know? And then when I kept looking into it more and more and more, then I discovered that there were more Black women in the town. And I said, now this is fascinating, because the Salem witch trials is in 1692. So it's not in the period that is more famous for, you know, slavery and Obia and what have you. So it precedes all of this stuff. I said, wow, this is exciting. And then looking at the word Obia and understanding that there's a negative connotation I realized that, A, Christianity is a very young religion. It's younger than Judaism. It's younger than Muslim faith. And I said, let's look at what Obeah is. So it is, you know, associated with magic and sorcery. But what is that magic and sorcery? Looking at the women in Salem, they were using herbs. They were midwives. They were whatever. This is what was deemed as Obeah. Don't you know? Does your grandmother not use herbs to heal you? Do you not know women? Are you there? Hello?
Oh, I'm here.
Okay, you're very quiet.
We've heard the word, I heard the word growing up many, many times during the course of my journey as well.
And so for me, I'm like, I know my grandmother uses herbs and medicines to heal me. I know that, you know, wet nurses, midwives and stuff that we've known in history, this is magic? Is this what's defined as magic when you're able to heal? And so with that discovery and with my understanding of that, I'm not saying that my definition of Obeah encompasses all definition of Obeah, but in this play, the witch is the wise woman. The witch is the healer. Therefore, I'm taking a negative connotation and making it into a positive one. And therefore, redefining the word Obeah to say, okay, we can place it all in here, but this is what these represented. And if the Puritans are saying that they used Obeah, because it's in the historical documentation, the Puritans, the white Puritans, are using this word Obeah, I'm going to say, yeah, this is what you guys thought. Well, it is healing and magic if you don't know what we're doing. And maybe this is a very prehistoric version of black girl magic.
So what would you say then to an individual who says, is it meant to instill the word itself? Is it meant to instill fear or is it meant to instill spiritual hope?
I think it's both. Because remember, as stolen Africans, we were told that everything about us was evil and wrong. The first thing that was banned was the African drum. We would be lynched if we drummed. We would be lynched to do anything to do with anything of our culture. And so for me, this is a re-education as well to say, why is it that everything that we did in the past is deemed as evil? Why?
Wow.
And how do we turn that around historically
right. And
learn more about ourselves?
Now, the work, as you mentioned, it's this fascinating revisitation, Nicole, of the Salem witch trials from the perspective of Caribbean slave women. Now, how are you and your co-director, your choreographer, Anthony Prime Guerra, using dance to capture and demonstrate the depth of what happened?
Well, I have to say that Prime has been not only the co-director and choreographer, but he's been my guru, and he's been almost, like some would say, spiritual advisor and a historian, because, you know, he pushed the work further to say, how is it that blacks tell stories? And when we look at the great entertainers, storytelling doesn't just encompass stage, like stage work, like meaning, you know, in theater. It encompasses music. It encompasses dance. Like, this is how we, as Africans, Caribbean folk, tell stories. And in the sense, he would say, this is the real form of opera. This is how we do opera. We don't separate them. They're all together. So the language of dance being put into this piece is indicative, because I use chant. I use a lot of historical music. And it is always affiliated with dance. So it's a very natural progression. And this vocabulary of Caribbean folk, in particular in this work, is being exposed to on a main stage level. And to really understand how geopolitical America's black people tell stories in this manner. It's very exciting. And to hear that it's never been done before is kind of like, well, no, it has. But has it been done in a main stage, and has it been done here? And how do we expose ourselves to the audiences now to embrace a very popular historical story in the Americas through the lens of black women and through the lens of black dance, Caribbean folk in particular, and exposing it to a large audience.
Yes, yes. And the movement on stage, because I did have the opportunity to see it last year, the movement on stage is so organic, engaging, freeing as well. And I found that as we watch the dance artists on stage, the artists in general, there is a connection that they try to make with the audience as they're presenting. So it becomes much more than a performance, so to speak. So we do definitely get that taste of traditional Caribbean folk movement and dance, as you're talking about, that really just takes over the stage. It's this explosion of celebration at times as well.
Thank you. I'll be sure to let Prime know that you said that. So just to correct you, you didn't see it last year. It may feel like last year, but the last performance we did was in 2015 at the Pan Am Games.
Can you believe right. That yes. I've been sleeping for the past few years, but yes, it's been a few years. Yes, when I had the opportunity to see it, and it was just so powerful at that time. Just celebration is what comes to mind when I think about when I see it.
That's a beautiful word. It is indeed a celebration, and I know that with the dance elements, that was the first time some doubt dance elements. And I would say it was peppered in. It was a sprinkle. And what Fall for Dance North and this time is affording us with this special presentation. It's not the full play. It's a 20-minute excerpt or compilation of specific dance moments that will be used or, you know, continued on in the work in a later incarnation. But I agree with you. I think ritual, I think some of the music that encompasses the dance that Prime has choreographed is all inclusive, meaning it draws people in. So we know that even when we do particular numbers, that people want to stand up and dance with us. So whether it is, you know, and when you say it's organic, yes, I agree with you. So it's not whether if. It is organic, and I think that that's spirit of the work that's in there. And we're learning, at least for me, I'm learning more and more the importance of dance as a means and language of storytelling that a lot of people don't use in this medium, because I feel that we are elaborating, this is my mission, elaborating what Broadway would call musicals in the storytelling. You know, it's not necessarily us breaking out in dance at this particular moment because it calls for a dance number, something exciting.
Right.
That with everything that we do, there is a rhyme and reason, whether it be spiritual or cultural or what have you. We're telling that story in that way. And dance is a necessary vocabulary to enhance and to propel forward that story in a very exciting way.
Right. Well, we are loving the vocabulary. And we're going to close with you now because we're just about out of time, Nicole.
Yes.
But thank you for sharing your wisdom with our listening audience this morning on the show. And I think the individuals now have a little bit of a taste of what they can expect to see at Fall for Dance North as well.
Yeah.
So congratulations to you, all of the artists that you're working with, to Prime as well, famously
Thank
known
you.
As Prime.
Yes, he's famously known as Prime. That's who he is. Prime Minister Optimus Prime.
Yes.
He's seen him a lot with all the Prime. I said, we're now in Prime time.
Well, thank you, Nicole, for joining us. And again, please give our thanks as well to your crew. It's been a pleasure having you with us.
Please go out and get those tickets soon. I hear it's almost sold out.
Well,
and we are performing on the 5th and the 6th, so we're on the second sort of billing on the main stage.
And Turnout Radio will be there to capture it as well and to take a peek at all things
Obia Opera. Yeah.
Thank you again for joining us this morning, Nicole.
Thank you.
A pleasure having you with us.
All right. Thank you so much. Cheers.
That was Nicole Brooks here to talk with us about Obia Opera. Now, don't miss this. It can be seen at Fall for Dance North this October. And of course, you can visit www.ffdnorth.com for details. We're going to take a quick break and be right back after this.